Well, let's welcome you to This Week in the Association. I'm Rob Pannier, joined by Kevin Lucco from the 10th Inning Stretch, and this is our big playoff preview as the American Association playoffs will kick off on Wednesday with the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks hosting the St. Paul Saints for the first two games of their series, and the Sioux City Explorers hosting the Kansas City T-Bones for game one and two starting Wednesday night. Kevin, it was an exciting end of the season, exciting time that we're reaching in here into the playoffs, but let's first of all, kind of talk about your thoughts about the season. Generally, you know, what do you walk away with before we start talking about playoffs?
Well, what a fun season it was, just in general. But, you know, it's just the ebbs and flows of the season. You know, how many teams did we think at one time were going to be the team? And they end up dropping off, and another team would get on the hot streak at one time. We were calling the Railroaders the 27 Yankees. At one time, we had Kansas City run off, especially you. You know, at one time we thought, well, maybe the Saints aren't going to get in. And then they would. It was just a really unpredictable but fun ride through 100 games. And it was pretty cool that it just went down, even right down to the last day.
I had to admit, that was what I thought was one of the most exciting parts about this is that the playoff race was open heading into the last weekend. You know, both spots, except Fargo, had clinched their spot for quite some time. But St. Paul and Chicago were battling for that last spot heading into Friday night, and it was until Sunday that we knew one of the teams that got in the South, and yesterday we finally had both South Division teams in. And so there was a lot of drama. Unfortunately, some of that was off the field as well this season, but we didn't have any bad instances. We didn't have any crazy umpire circumstance this year, making fun of umpires or whatever. We didn't have fights off, you know, after the game or whatever. So, you know, they kept it pretty clean, and I had to admit that made the season for me a lot more enjoyable.
Yeah, everyone stayed off the police blotter, so it's always a good sign.
We'll talk a little bit about that Kansas City Stadium later on, situation later on. But let's recap some of the aspects before we start talking about the playoffs here, Kevin. First of all, player and pitcher of the month for August, Victor Roach had another spectacular month for Chicago, was chosen as the player of the month. The pitcher of the month, Mike Tamborino. The league wound up going with DJ Snelton, who was, I think, 4-1 during the month. And I admit Tamborino was only like 2-1. But I just couldn't argue with that 0.76 ERA. That was pretty unreal for a guy who made six starts.
You know, I saw Tamborino pitch twice, once in Milwaukee and once in St. Paul, and it was as good as I've ever seen him pitch. I know last year he got off to a red-hot start for Lincoln, and then by the time he got to Fargo, things were really clicking for him, but this time around, he's started the season good and kept it going, and you could want to say he has probably peaked in August.
The one thing I loved about that Chicago lineup this season was that Victor Roach-Keon Barnum combination. Reminded me very much of the 2015 Vinny DeFazio-Angelo Sanco kind of feel to it there, where, you know, these guys could go deep on at any moment on you, but man, even more power. You know that, I mean, teams really can't pitch around both guys, so it was just exciting to watch them play this season. I think they gave Chicago fans a real thrill.
And I think Chicago needed that. I think fans really got into this team this year and it showed at the turnstiles. You have to wonder, though, what could Roach put those numbers up if he didn't have Barnum hit ahead of him? So I guess that'll be a question for my final ending year or so. Who knows where Barnum and Roach will be heading to next season.
Well, I'd assume with the numbers that they put up that they'll be appearing somewhere, because neither one of them looks like they need to be hanging it up anytime soon. We talk about the pitcher and player of the month of the week, Kevin, as well. The guy, you know, we talked about him a little bit last week in Zhang Tao there in Texas and the performance he had, then comes out and throws 7 2/3 no-hit innings. And I thought, you know, the thing I'm kind of wondering is, I wonder if this guy even really understood the excitement of a no-hitter. You know, coming from the Chinese culture, maybe they didn't really get that, but man, that was a fun game to watch. And this guy looks like he's got some good stuff.
Yeah, you have to wonder if the Air Hogs were doing all the traditional no-hitter stuff where they're ignoring him in the dugout or not talking to him. And yeah, you just don't know if he understands the no-hitter culture. He's probably thinking, well, geez, I'm pitching really good. Why does nobody want to talk to me anymore?
Yeah, they're all giving him the cold shoulder, and for you know the superstitious aspect, and he's probably thinking they hate him. Man, they hate me for throwing a no-hitter. What's the problem over here? So, congratulations to him though, because that was quite a run that he had down the stretch there in his last three starts. And you know, I understand our good buddy Dana Kirker. I hope I'm saying that right, by the way. Told me that 5'9", you're just not going to get much of an opportunity in affiliate ball. And so. I'm hoping he's able to pass the stigma, not only being that height.
I
Kevin,
don't see where that's an issue. I don't think Greg Maddux was the tallest guy around.
well, you know, the interesting thing was about, I think it was 2 seasons ago, 2017 it probably would have been. Dana was up in the St. Paul Saints press box with me, and he was looking at the guy who was starting that night. I think it was for Fargo. And he said, how tall is this guy? And I looked it up and he was like 5'10". And he said, oh, he'll never get a shot. And I was like, what does that have to do with anything? He said, go out and look on Major League Baseball site and find me a pitcher who's less than 6 foot tall. Tim Lincecum was the only guy. Every other pitcher in the major leagues was at least 6 foot tall. And I guess that's a standard right now that they don't even consider if you're not. So I don't get it, Kevin, because you know you and I grew up in guys who knew how to pitch and didn't blow guys away with 100-mile-an-hour fastballs. They knew how to just get guys out. But I guess you have to be 6'4" and weigh 240 now to be a major league pitcher. I don't get it, Kevin. So.
You just think though, like when Randy Johnson was getting started and he was so dang tall that his mechanics were an issue because when he had such long arms and long legs like he did, it was just hard to get everything in sync. So you would think it would be tougher for a taller pitcher because it would be tougher for him to get all the mechanics down. But I guess the other side of the argument with that is when you're that height, when you're striding towards home plate, you're only 60 feet 6 inches away. When you've got that long stride and you can be so much closer to home plate than someone much shorter than you, that's a distinct advantage also. So I guess there's two really good sides to that argument.
And you know, I completely get that because you're probably taking away 5 or 5.5 feet of distance between you and home plate by how tall you are by the time you release the ball. Okay, so maybe I get that aspect of it, but I still look at it, if you're good enough to win and get guys out, and that seems like rule number one to me. But you know, baseball isn't always the logical way I think it should be, I guess, Kevin.
I don't know. I was 6'4", and I probably couldn't strike out a blind man swinging a needle, so.
The American Association yesterday, Kevin, names home run champion Keon Barnum as the league MVP. You really can't argue with that, Kevin.
No, you really can't. The numbers are there. I guess the only doubt that was in a few of the voters' minds was, do you give the MVP to the guy that was primarily a designated hitter? But I know the betting line for quite a while was probably on Chase Simpson as he was chasing a triple crown, but Simpson struggled towards the end of his season and it seemed like the consensus vote swayed over to Barnum.
Well, there were a couple of guys who got off to quick starts in Simpson and Ale Lago that you thought, you know, these guys are going to be serious MVP candidates, but you know, it became the guy who set an American Association record in home runs that winds up winning it. And you can't really argue. He had a great season all the way around. So congratulations to him. Also named is the American Association postseason all-star team. Not a surprise at anybody on this list. Barnum is the first baseman. John Nestor from Cleburne is the catcher. Also from Cleburne, third baseman Chase Simpson. And I think they had an outfielder here too, didn't they? No, that was it. St. Paul Saints get in designated hitter Brady Shoemaker and outfielder Dan Modell. Victor Roach joins his teammate Keon Barnum from the Chicago Dogs. Mitch Lamson is the Winnipeg Gold Eyes addition there in the starting rotation with Jeff Broussard as the relief pitcher. And rounding out the team, Tim Colwell From Fargo is the other outfielder. Nate Sampson from Sioux City is the shortstop. And I think Ale Lago is the second baseman from Sioux Falls. So congratulations to those guys. I would assume, Kevin, that there's not really anybody that you disagree with there.
No, it's a solid lineup. A couple observations we were making yesterday was of the postseason All-Star team, the only player that wasn't in the All-Star game was Tim Caldwell.
That's
and
true.
Also, not a Kansas City wins the South Division and not a single postseason All-Star.
You know, not surprising because you look at that team and nobody had just a spectacular year. You know, a lot of really good solid seasons, but nobody that you just go, wow, those numbers are eye-popping. So it's surprising. It shows you what a well-balanced team that is. It's going to be difficult to face in the playoffs because there's not anybody you can focus on as an opposing team. So that should be interesting.
And I believe our good friend Dan Vaughn was saying that there was not even a T-Bone that was Player of the Week this year, at least by the American Association.
I believe you are correct. And I don't – did we have anybody that wound up coming out of Kansas City that was chosen as Player of the Week this season, Kevin? I don't think we did. I'm going to look that up right now while we're discussing other things, and I'll see if we did. But I'm thinking we may not have even had somebody this season. Let's talk about some other things going on around the American Association. The Gary South Shore Railcats end the season with their first home sweep of the year, so we just wanted to give them a little pat on the back for that there. Justin Sinibaldi, who I went under the radar for most of the year, winds up winning the ERA title at 2.75. So, I mean, I knew he was having a pretty solid season, Kevin. I didn't know it was that good, though.
No, he was widely recognized as the ace of that staff and was one of the few guys that continually was able to get the Rail Cats into the sixth and seventh inning. Going back to the sweep, you know, they ought to do like hockey where if a team sweeps a series, the whole team should go out, form a circle around the pitcher's mound, all have a bat, and then simultaneously raise their bats in the air as a salute to the crowd.
I agree. I agree completely. I love that in hockey. I should do that. Kevin, let's work on that. Let's make that happen. I think that's a great idea. We move on to Texas. Brent Eibner winds up heading to Sugarland in the Atlantic League. So congratulations to him. And we want a pat on the back for Zeke LeMond, Kevin.
Yeah, Zach.
Zach, I thought it was Zeke. I thought it was Zeke, isn't it?
Zach.
Okay. I thought that then they were typed wrong. Okay, I'm sorry. Continue on, though.
Yeah, Zach was at risk of breaking the American Association record for most losses in a season held by Jeremy Strawn, but he pitched a doozy on, I believe it was Saturday night in Milwaukee, and not only avoided the L column, but now also notched his first win of the season. So I'm very happy to see that for Mr. LeMond after, you know, you got to give the kid a ton of credit. I believe an ERA over 7, but he went out and took the ball every time that he needed to and gave it a shot for the Airhawks. So a lot of times you get guys that get close to a record for most losses and then some will just kind of shy away and want to get skipped in the rotation. But with the Airhawks short on arms, LeMond took his start every 5 days and did yeoman work and was finally rewarded on Saturday night with a victory.
Yeah, made 19 starts this season. And I got to give Texas a little credit on those two games because you had Zhang Tao who went Friday night and allowed 2 hits. And then LeMond comes back Saturday night and allows just 1 in 8 innings. I mean, Milwaukee had to be going, what's going on here? You know, 3 hits is all we're getting in 2 nights. That probably wasn't what they were expecting from those Texas Airhawks. So good for them for battling that out there. We also want to talk about Winnipeg Gold Eyes, Mitch Lamson, who finished the season as the wins leader in the American Association and set a Winnipeg Gold Eyes record for innings pitched in a year with 150.2. Goes to the Atlantic League, so does Victor Capion. And we also want to mention Reggie Abercrombie. It might be hanging up the cleats there, Kevin.
Yeah, for what's been rumored throughout the year, I just think after yesterday's events, it may be a foregone conclusion now that Abercrombie is either A, done as a gold eye, or B, done with baseball, period. Yeah, so salute to Abercrombie. Everybody used his bat yesterday, and late in the game, they removed Abercrombie in the middle of the inning so that the fans of Winnipeg could show their respects to a guy that will have his number 11 on the wall in Winnipeg in short order, I would imagine. And, you know, I never had a chance to talk to Reggie, but everything I heard is that he was just a all-around good guy. Teammates loved him. Opposing players loved him. And he was just I've heard it described by him. He was just a good baseball ambassador.
I have to echo those sentiments, Kevin, because everything I have heard from guys around the league, I've had a chance to talk to Reggie on a couple of occasions, never anything very in-depth, but teammates, opposing players is almost always the indicator of what a guy is, what kind of a guy somebody is, and everybody in this league loved this guy. I mean, they hated playing against him because he usually wound up doing some damage against their team. But as a human being, he was always well respected. And, you know, Wichita Wingnuts guys really liked him despite him costing them two championships. But, you know, he just earned a lot of respect. So if it is the swan song for Reggie Abercrombie, we want to say, boy, you sure left a mark on this league.
Yes, he has. I'll give you a Reggie Abercrombie story. I got this one from talking to Steve Hamburger, father of former Saints pitcher Mark Hamburger. Hamburger and Reggie had a rivalry, but it was always a friendly rivalry. And the thing with Reggie is that being a veteran like he is, a lot of times pitchers just didn't give him anything to hit. It was a lot of breaking stuff, a lot of nibbling on corners, just would not pitch to him. But Reggie and Mark Hamburger had their thing when they played against each other. Hamburger said, "Here's the deal, Reggie. Every at bat, I'm going to give you one fastball. Hit it or don't hit it." So they kind of had like their own little game within a game going where every bat, Mark Hamburger would challenge Abercrombie with a fastball. And I know those guys were very good friends off the field. So, yeah, it just says a lot about the kind of guy that Reggie Abercrombie is.
Also in Winnipeg Gold Eyes news, Kevin, it looks like they may be looking at a new hitting coach in Winnipeg.
Yeah, you know, it was rumored after last year, but now it's come to fruition that longtime first base coach Tom Vaith will be leaving the Gold Eyes organization to pursue other opportunities in baseball.
And we also want to talk about, lastly, the Cleburne Railroaders eliminated from the playoffs yesterday. You know, this was a team I thought was going all the way. So, I'd say I was dead wrong with that, but disappointing end. And you really, Kevin and I talked about this a little bit before the show, is that, boy, you got to be patting those Lincoln Salt Dogs on the back for putting together two of the most impressive games for a team that had nothing to play for.
Right. You know, so often in this league you see teams that they get a chance to play spoiler and it's just not the motivation there or just not the ability, and it's going to roll over, play dead, and don't help the teams that need their help. But Lincoln took the roll on and took two out of three games against the Railroaders at Haymarket Park, including an extra inning thriller where veteran Kurt Smith hit the game-winning home run.
It says a lot about about the job Bobby Brown did in managing that team that they were not quitting in those last few games, because again, it'd be really easy to roll over at that point. You got five or six games left and you're like, yeah, well, you know, this is a playoff team, we're not, it was just, you know, call it quits. But you know, all of those guys gave in their best effort, and that wound up giving two comeback victories against the a fairly good Cleburne bullpen there, but battling back in the eighth inning in two of those games, and then winning in extra innings in the final contest of that series, and I just thought, wow, that's some gusto right there, Kevin.
Well, what does Dan Vaughn always say?
They have players too.
They got uniforms. They're getting paid.
Yes, they are. I agree with you completely. Well, Kevin, we're going to move to the playoffs, and we'll start in the South, where the Kansas City T-Bones put together quite a stretch in August and into the first couple of days of September, coming from the team that was out of the playoffs Friday afternoon to the division winners by taking the first three games against Sioux City. So let's first of all just talk about that aspect of it, Kevin, because Kansas City showed a lot of moxie to a 500 team for much of the season. Then all of a sudden, they're division winners.
Well, let's roll the tape back a little bit into the earlier part of August, where I believe at one time they were 9 or 10 games back. To make up that much room in a span of a month is just mind-boggling. And it wasn't like they were just this machine because, yeah, a guy like Mason Davis, he is playing. I think he's been playing hurt on and off for like the last month or so now. Daniel Nava is fighting injuries. Daniel Nava was out of the lineup for a while with an injury. So it's kind of similar script for Joe Calcaterra, where he's been having to juggle guys around and trying to find a healthy lineup. And I tell you what, it's even now a pitcher Akeem Bostic, who started on Saturday night, struck out the first seven batters he faced and left the game with an injury. So even his status going in the playoffs is up in the air. So, you sent a message to me over the weekend, and that's got to be, well, didn't have to be consideration for Joe Calcaterra being Manager of the Year once again.
I think
I mean,
it's.
yeah, you,
Go
well, you
ahead.
know, you had Brent Cleveland did a great job with the Railroaders to get them competitive, and Butch Hobson did a fine job with the Chicago Dogs, and I mean, you gotta kind of give a bit of a nod to Jim Bennett and Fargo and George Samus. Heck, even Steve Montgomery getting the Explorers out of the hole that they were in, so I don't envy the voters in the league who have to try to vote for a manager of the year this season.
Well, we'll be doing that pretty soon here, Kevin. So you better not think it's too easy yet, because you'll be choosing that yourself coming up here pretty soon. I just have to say is that what impressed me about this performance of this Kansas City team was early on they were just not able to get on any roll, and I know that teams don't like to, managers don't like to give excuses, okay? And I think they get used to the idea of you're going to lose a guy, you got to replace him. You have injuries, you're going to replace a guy. If you have an affiliate ball club comes calling, then you got to figure out a new guy to replace that. But eight rain delays in like 5 or 6 weeks, you just can't count on. I mean, you can't, you can't figure out how you're going to work through that. And so this team really never kind of got rolling because, you win a couple of games and then you're rained out. Then you're playing a doubleheader the next night or you have a doubleheader 2 weeks down the road or something. And I thought that he was able to keep that team motivated enough to just stay above water. And then when they got into kind of a little groove where they were actually able to play games, they caught on fire. And I thought, wow, how do you do that with a team that didn't have great numbers, okay, but went 24-9 in the last 33 games of the season? That's crazy, Kevin.
Yeah, and even within that, I know talking to Dan after Kansas City was swept in Sioux City, even like, and I think that was like a week and a half ago, Dan was having doubts about, well, maybe Sioux City is just a better team. And then, wow, Kansas City takes care of business in Texas and comes back home and takes 3 out of 4 from Sioux City to not only get a playoff clinching win, but they also win the entire division. So Go figure.
Very
And you know what?
impressive.
It's kind of crazy when you think about it. Of all the teams in the league, the first team to clinch a division title was Kansas City.
That's true. Yes, it was. Fargo was the first to get a playoff spot, but Kansas City was the first to win their division. You are right. So I hadn't really thought about that. That is pretty crazy. So congratulations to those T-Bones. So let's talk about this series right now, Kevin. You have a Sioux City team that looked like they were dominating Kansas City for much of the year, then go and face the T-Bones in Kansas City and kind of get their collective butts handed to them, if you want to say that. So what do you think is the attitude around Sioux City right now, and what do they do to prep themselves for this series?
Well, I think for Sioux City, they have to feel pretty confident in the first couple games, being in their own ballpark. This is a team, I know Connor Ryan was taking notes and making comparisons. This is a team that hits a lot better at home than they do on the road. And, you know, there was talk that Sioux City was going to take the first two games at home, whether they won the division title or not. Who knows what the strategy is there, but I'm wondering if it's a confidence thing where Steve Montgomery wanted his guys playing in a situation that they're comfortable with, getting a couple wins, and then getting three kicks at the can on the road. But, yeah, this is a Jekyll and Hyde team as far as hitting at home as opposed to on the road. Now, yesterday we saw against John Perrin a pretty tough customer. Sioux City came out, went right after it, and knocked Perrin out of the game in the fourth inning. But the two previous nights, it was tough going for the Sioux City lineup, and they don't look that great once you get past the first five or six guys in the lineup. But there's just something magical about the team at home. They seem to get clutch hits. They seem the guys that don't normally contribute tend to contribute when they're at their own ballpark.
To support that comment, Sioux City hit 26 points higher at home this season, scored 30 more runs than they did on the road. So that's, you know, a little bit better than half a run a game you're adding by playing at home, and you're, you know, able to produce more offensively all the way around, with the exception of homers. Their homers were down just a little bit at home in comparison to on the road. But, you know, when you're able to perform better offensively, your pitching staff starts to feel better, and you start to feel like you can get big victories. And so that's, you know, this might have actually worked out better for them that they are opening at home this way. I agree with you on that thought. Do you have
I think the key for go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, you're the genius.
No, what I was going to ask you here is that as you look at Sioux City rolling into here, what are some keys that you say if the Explorers are going to win the series, here's what they got to do?
I think it comes down to pitching for them. I think you're looking at your guys like a Sierra, Taylor Jordan, Pete Tago. They got to get you into the sixth or seventh inning, because if they can, it's playing to their strengths when you got the bullpen with Gerken, Ballwell, and Proberenko. Though, in the games I've seen Proberenko this year, he doesn't seem to be a lockdown closer. So, like on Sunday night, he gave up the big blow that got Kansas City back into the game. So, and who knows, maybe they're getting overworked a little bit, but frankly right now I would say, yeah, that's their strength, is the starting pitcher seem to get them into the sixth or seventh, and let your strong guys out there take it from there.
You know, I agree with you about that, but kind of in a different way, and that's because Sioux City's bullpen has been so dominant against virtually every team this season, except for Kansas City. They don't look the least bit intimidated by that group. They don't seem fooled or beaten or overmatched at the plate at all. And I think the starters are going to have to produce six and seven outstanding innings, because I don't know, maybe there isn't a feeling like you can necessarily count on these guys to get T-Bones players out, because they haven't been doing a very effective job of that, especially this last weekend.
Right. I think the If you get past those three guys too in Sioux City's bullpen, I think there is a considerable drop off too when you get into Velez and Ryan Flores. But I think a key to the game I thought yesterday for Sioux City was Taco going the entire way and giving your bullpen a day off.
Plus today
I know
off.
Falwell had pitched 2 days in a row. But everybody in the pen got yesterday off, and with the day off before a series begins, maybe you're going to have some refreshed arms, and the results could be different.
Here's another important stat for you, too, Kevin. Sioux City with a 3.71 ERA at home, 4.50 on the road. So if you combine the lack of runs that they haven't been as good offensively, and that their pitching staff has not been as good, you're talking about like a 1.3 run per game differential between home and away. Boy, you better win those two games at home. It's kind of the feeling I would think is if they don't come out and win games one and two in Sioux City, they might be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, very good point.
Well, let's talk about Kansas City now, Kevin. What do you see as keys for these T-Bones?
I think the starting pitching for them is also going to have to be pretty spot on. And I think they sport one of the better rotations coming into the series of the four playoff teams. And it was kind of patchwork for a while, but, Joe's kind of found his guys now with Collier, Dylan Baker, John Perrin. We don't know what's going to come with Keane Bostic, but TJ House is a really good pickup for them. I think with Kansas City, though, the bullpen has been leaky at times, especially with the free passes. So I think teams are going to look at against the starters, you want to work the pitch count, get their pitch count up where Kansas City's got to go to their pen in the fifth or in the sixth or seventh inning. And I think that's where Kansas City could be a little vulnerable.
Well, if you take the combination of Baker, Tommy Collier, and Jonathan Perrin in August, 11-2, these three guys were. And I think because of that suspect bullpen, that you got to get 7 innings out of those guys every night. Now, that's not how well these guys have pitched. I don't think you're asking very much. They've been fantastic, and I think Joe Calfabietra has a big advantage in the series in one particular way, and that is his team has continually shown over the last month that they could fall behind early, like 4 or 5 runs, it means nothing to them. Okay, they're going to chip away at a lead until they battle themselves back into a game, and then they're going to score late and win. I think the way this team looks at things right now. So sort of the same way the St. Paul Saints look at this. We'll talk about that later on more. But it's like they never feel that they're out of games. So if their starter's struggling a little early, there's not a need to pull a hook because they're going to score and they're going to win games later on. And I think psychologically, that's a very tough thing for an opponent to overcome, because you can't beat that kind of confidence when they know they can win and beat you at any time.
Right. And I think the key to that is getting off to the lead and just not giving them a pulse. But, yeah, right now the confidence for Kansas City is riding pretty high. And, yeah, there are similarities right now between the run that Kansas City has been on and how the St. Paul Saints have got it done in the North. It sounds like Sean O'Malley, the soonest he could be back would be for the championship series. I'm not sure on Chris Colabello. I know he's playing in an Olympic qualifier right now, I believe, for Team Italy. So we don't know when he'll be back, if he'll be back for the series or not. It's, tell you what, and I think both sides, I was watching Mason Davis try to run on Sunday night, and you could tell he's not 100% at all, and Jose Sermo for Sioux City took a couple nasty foul balls off his leg, and you can tell he's kind of moving around a little gingerly right now. So I think the key for Kansas City is right now just making sure you got 9 healthy guys out there, because the confidence is high even if the health isn't there.
I would say another big factor for this season or this series, Kevin, is we've watched a lot of games this season for Sioux City where they're trailing 2-1, 3-1, and then all of a sudden a seven-run inning is burst out. That they wind up scoring 9 in an inning or scoring 6. And Kansas City's done a very effective job of not allowing those big innings to occur. It's been when they give up a run or two, they make sure that a run or two is all that's going to be scored. And that is something that hurts Sioux City. This isn't a great hitting team, but when they roll, they roll. Okay, they really put things together. So I think the T-Bones have to continually say to themselves, we'll give up 3 runs in this inning and we'll be happy with that because we're not giving up 8.
Right, yeah, I think I said a little earlier, the bottom part of the Sioux City lineup just doesn't really scare you, and if you can get through the first five with a minimal amount of damage, then yeah, you're going to be sitting pretty good.
Before moving to the North Series, we do want to discuss a little bit with the Kansas City Stadium situation for the T-Bones, because I did see recently, within the last couple of days, that a lot of the local papers in that area were running stories about this is the last game the T-Bones will be playing as a franchise, and from what I'm hearing is that information is fake news to say the least. Is that this team is going to be fine. Somebody's going to be in here and running this club, and they will be playing in T-Bone Stadium or whatever it is called in 2020.
All those TV stations they were on, I was in Kansas City for the last 3 games of the Sioux City series, and I did not see one reporter come up to press row. I would have gladly have talked to any of them if they had questions, but it seems like they want to spin their own narrative, and which will make for better shock television. There's a TV report that says, things are just fine here. They'll be back in 2020. And people aren't going to really care about your story, but it could be the end. Just has that shock value, and it's brutal. Generally, I don't even like to watch news anymore.
I'm with you. I'm with you because it is. I can watch 4 different news stations and hear the same story presented 4 different ways. And I'm like, you know what? There is actual truth to this somehow or another. So I don't know what somebody's spelling. And the sad thing is that all 4 stations will have it wrong.
Oh yeah, like one station thought that that they were going to be evicted before the championship series would even start. I mean,
Read a calendar.
just shoddy reporting.
Read a calendar. Learn how to read a calendar. How about that for a start for you? That's a good place to begin. So, well, let's head out to the north there, Kevin, where the St. Paul Saints, on the last weekend of the season, not only clinch a playoff berth, but wind up winning the division on the last day of the season. Let's first of all begin with Fargo, who's been the team that's known for the longest time that they were going to be in the playoffs, but comes in kind of limping, going 4-6 in their last 10. They wind up taking 2 out of 3 from Cleburne to end the season, but were, kind of manhandled by St. Paul. Let's first talk about the season itself. Your thoughts on the Fargo season heading into this series?
Well, I don't think there were many surprises. I know you and I were both pretty high on them to start the season, and I thought the pitching staff, the starting staff was solid. The bullpen was good. They had the hiccups here and there, but Bruce Steinbrenner has established himself as the premier closer in the league, and I thought first 6, 7 batters of Fargo, I would have put them up against anybody in the entire league, and the results were there. It just kind of seemed to run into a roadblock as of late.
I really don't think enough can be said about the job that manager Jim Bennett has done there either, because not only has he, worked his talent and made sure that, they've stayed focused and have been winning games, especially after a solid but not spectacular start to the season. But let's remember that this guy came and took over when Michael Schlack got a job with the Milwaukee Brewers, and so he was taking somebody else's team first, made some changes to it, but he had to mold that team into his vision. And I don't know if enough people are kind of giving him credit for the great job he's done this season.
No, I think it's kind of flown under the radar a bit, but yeah, you're right. It was a lot of the guys that, Michael Schlacht had brought in, and as we were discussing before, it just seemed like Schlacht was very proactive as far as getting his guys in the previous year locked down for 2019, and this year that's paid off dearly for him.
Well, they come into the series slumping a little bit, but what are keys that you see for the Redhawks?
I think it's the top three guys with Metzger,
Caldwell,
and Ehart. If those guys get on bases instead of running around, I think that just makes their offense go, and you get a little preoccupied with them, and you got guys like Jacobs, Pena, and Fry that can put a ball over the fence. I just thought that top six is just a, I mean, there's no weak spot there. It's six solid hitters.
You're absolutely right. Every one of those guys hit at least 300. I think the key to that is that these guys not only need to get on, but Prime and Pena in particular, hitting in the five and six spots in the lineup, are really going to have big series, because I don't think much production is going to come from that seven through nine hitters. And so if they aren't able to drive in guys, either because Colwell, Ehart, and Metzger aren't getting on, or because they're not delivering, then this is going to be a very tough series for Fargo. I just see that they're not going to score a lot of runs, and they're not going to beat a St. Paul team that's been scoring a lot of runs themselves. So Pena and Prime are really the keys for me in this series, and if those guys have played like they have most of the season, then Fargo should be fine.
Right. I guess we don't know the status of Carlos Garcia. I think he hit by a pitch and seeing ball and was out of the lineup for a bit. I know he got off to a good start with them, so that would be a plus for the bottom part of the Redhawks lineup. But if he's out, there's not a lot of depth in that lineup. And if you get like a guy or two hurt in this series, then Fargo could be in some deep trouble.
We move on to the St. Paul Saints. They wind up winning the division in the final day of the season there. Kevin, you know, I've watched manager George Samus here now for about six seasons, and I got to say that I thought this was the most impressive season, watching him build this team and make changes and figure out ways to win ball games. So tell me a little bit about your thoughts about St. Paul this last year and why you thought that they got to this point.
Yeah, it's funny because I'm sure if you look back in our archives, you were probably saying the same thing 12 months ago.
That's probably true.
You know, there's just really not a lot about this team that just wows you. You got the two all-stars with Moe, who, when you look at him, going into the season as a fourth outfielder, and Brady Shoemaker with another solid season coming back from a double hernia. But it just, I don't know what it is. You look at the lineup, the stats aren't stunning. Josh Allen has become a power threat, and John Silviano, he is what he is. He's a guy that's not going to give you a great batting average, but he's a guy that will jump out of mistake and hit it 400 feet to right field. I think Jabari Henry is going to be a key in the series. Can he find his stroke like he had with Sioux Falls a couple of years ago? I know he has struggled with St. Paul, but he's had a few big hits here and there. Silviano, a guy that got recognition lately for his efforts, Jeremy Martinez. Martinez has had a resurgence as of late. So you got a guy like Chesley Young at third base in 263 for the year, but when you look at him in June, he was hitting 135, and we just kind of wondered if he'd ever get it going. So, you know, a lot of times it's been a different hero in St. Paul. They just kind of sneak up on you. They don't look like much. There's not a MVP candidate in the lineup, but they just find a way to get it done.
You know, Kevin, I have to say that the one thing that has really stood out for me this year has been the fact that if we were looking at guys that went on to, you know, sign somewhere else, okay, if Max Murphy and three-fifths of this rotation were still there, Dustin Crenshaw, Nick Belzer, and Spencer Jones, this is a 75-win team, possibly, you know, but it's like this team still figured out a way to have the best record in the league with four of their top nine guys taken away from them.
You look at it, four-fifths of the rotation started the season in the bullpen.
Yeah. Is that crazy? That's quite a job there. And, you know, I've looked at that aspect of it today when I was kind of examining the two series. And I thought, man, this is a team now, very much like we look at the other series and we say, and I don't mean to jump into the series yet, but we look at those and we say, wow, the starting pitchings have to go six, seven innings to really help out. I don't really feel like George Samus needs that at all. You know, I think if he can get four solid innings, you know, give up two or three runs and four innings from these guys, he's going to be okay because he's had to do that all season long already. So, you know, it's an interestingly built team. And I find that to be one of the fascinating aspects about this season is watching the Saints roll to 64 victories with a team that you look at and you go, this team should not have won this many games.
Right. As far as pitching staff goes, you just got to wonder, what Eddie Medina are you going to get? Are you going to get the one that was bone chip issues? Or are you going to get the one that struggled in the middle of the year? Are you going to get the one that seemed to have fought through it? Or are you going to get the Medina that's had his last two starts, he's given up grand slam home runs and been hit around. So that's going to be a factor. I assume Medina will get game two if he's going on regular rest. Chris Lee, who, wow. You know, Lee, when he got signed, was just kind of a guy that was eating up an inning or so in the bullpen. And I think Lee's breakout was the big 15-inning victory against Chicago during the last homestand where he went five perfect innings. They give him a spot start against Fargo, and wow, three runs in 7 1/3, and he just looked brilliant. So, you know, Sean Aaronson brought up the question on the broadcast, could Chris Lee be this year's version of Chris Nunn?
It's a very interesting question, and they could use him to be that. There's no doubt about that. So, Kevin, as we talk about St. Paul now, what do you see as keys for them in this series?
I think it's the hitting. The hitting has been pretty inconsistent. A lot of times, you know, they'll have a week where they're putting up 6-7 runs a night, and then for the next week it's like one, maybe two, maybe three runs at best. So you're going to need to have consistent bats throughout the series, and I think you're going to need to have starting pitching keep you into the game until you can get to the better arms of the bullpen. You know, but then you got guys like Karch Kowalczyk has been brilliant, I think, in the last month or so of the season. Mike Devine is an established veteran, and Tanner Keith has taken the closer role and run with it. You know, I think a possible asset could be Todd Van Steensel if he can find his stuff. It's been tough going for him since he came off the inactive list, but you know, you look at it and he hadn't pitched for a month, but earlier this year he was your closer. You can pitch him, get him pitching well in the middle. You got to wonder, too, what is Samus going to do as far as who's going to be in, who's going to be out for starting pitchers? I think you got to have Medina pitching. Does Zimmerman go back to the bullpen as kind of a middle guy? Or do you put Jordan Jess in there so you have an extra left-hander along with Ken Frost to face guys like Ahart and Caldwell? So it's going to be interesting to see how George Samus decides to play that out as far as his rotation for the playoffs. But, hey, Paul, I think you're going to have to connect everything. The pitching's going to have to be good, and the offense is going to have to be consistent. You're going to have to play a perfect series, I think, to beat Fargo.
Talking with Saints play-by-play guy Sean Aaronson today, he came out with a key that he thought was that the team that made the least mistakes, and he understood this is kind of a cliche, but he looked at the team that made the least mistakes is going to be the one that wins the series. And he discussed with me about St. Paul has won six straight games against Fargo, and it's because they haven't made mistakes. They haven't thrown the bad pitch. They haven't made the costly error. They haven't thrown the, you know, run themselves into an out when they, you know, could have had a big inning. And what that just says to me is that it's smart baseball going on right now in St. Paul. And so it seems to me that the key for this team right now is to just keep playing intelligently, you know, not to do too much, not to do to try to be the guy or whatever, but to play within themselves, because they are very much to me like Kansas City. We saw in that Fargo series, they were losing every one of those games, battle back to win them all. And I think that says a lot about the character of this team, and it says a lot about the intelligence, which is that you get ahead of us, but we're not going away, and we're going to come back and beat you anyway.
Right. I hope St. Paul keeps their focus and doesn't think that just because they have beat Fargo six games in a row and 9 out of 12 this year that they can just show up and it's going to go in the win column. They're going to have to play a perfect game. You know, when we look at last year, look how St. Paul dominated Kansas City. It meant nothing in the championship series.
And so, I think that ensures they don't get overconfident. They went 6-1 against Kansas City last year and then lost. So I don't think that I think that they look at that as a good lesson for themselves and go, well, we're not going to get arrogant about this because that could happen to us again this year too.
At least the guys that are still around from last year.
Yeah, and there's still quite a few there. So, you know, so I'm sure they're already telling Brady Shoemaker and Eddie Medina and Mike Devine and guys like that, Josh Allen, are saying, hey, look, man, Josh Allen had left, but hey, we gave this thing away because we got cocky, or maybe, you know, we didn't take this seriously enough, or whatever the case may be. So, Kevin, so let's talk about most important time here. So let's discuss who is going to wind up winning the South. Who takes the series?
I believe that it's going to be a time for Sioux City.
Oh, really? Okay.
I believe they're going to find them. They're going to keep their home dominance, win the first two, drop one in Kansas City, and then by a fluke, by a Kansas City bullpen meltdown, they'll find a way to win one in Kansas City.
Well, after voting against Kansas City in the semifinal series, the South Division series last year, and in the championship series, and believing they'd finish fourth this year, and believing this last weekend that they wouldn't be the odd man out in the playoff run, I am completely caving and taking the Kansas City T-Bones to win this series in four. So going the other way from Kevin, how about in the North, Kevin?
In the North, I just got a hunch that Fargo's going to find a way to topple St. Paul. I just got a feeling that there's just too many bats in that lineup, and if St. Paul doesn't get consistent starting pitching, that it's going to be Fargo series. I see Fargo winning first two at home, and then find a way to win a game four in St. Paul. Hope I'm wrong.
I'm believing that you're going to be. I will go with St. Paul in four, believing that they will split in Fargo before taking the next two there at CHS Field. So I'm sure that Kansas City fans and St. Paul fans are grimacing knowing that I picked their team. And, oh, my God, we're through now. But there you are. Kevin?
I was hoping I'm right.
So, Kevin, any thoughts on the season you want to give before we head out for today?
You know, it's just been a really fun season. I guess on a personal level, the more I've gotten to know people throughout the league, and every night, whether I'm at CHS Field talking with the staff on the Saints, it's just, you know, those people up there have kind of become my summer family, and when I'm at home catching games on the computer or messaging with people, whether it be Craig in Winnipeg or Brad down in Texas, Tim Costello, whoever, it's just a really neat league. It's not, you know, it's not like the majors where it's such a disconnect. You just get to know these guys on a personal level. You know, I was in Kansas City yesterday. Joey Mello's baseball bread, him and I were talking during the game. And he asked me, because he knows I'm also a Twins fan. He goes, what would you rather have this year, a Twins World Series victory or a St. Paul Saints League Championship? And I didn't even have to think about it. Obviously, a St. Paul Saints League Championship. Because he just, you know, you get to know the staff, you get to know some of the players, and it just, you know, you just feel like you're part of it. And, yeah, I know I'm trying to be neutral. And like I said, I've got to know folks that are associated with so many teams throughout the league. And, it, you know, it's great that this time of the year is here with the playoffs are great to watch. But in a way, it's kind of bittersweet because, you know, you're 2 weeks away from a very long off season. So just enjoy the moment while it's there. And because, damn, the winter's going to be long and cold.
You know, I want to give a final thought about taking a risk for this week. A few years ago, and this is a good message for people to take to heart. A few years ago, when I had first started doing a podcast show with George Samus, Kevin came to me. I didn't really know him very well, and he said to me, "Hey, if ever you're you want a break or you want somebody else to do that show with George, I'd happily sit in one time." And I didn't know Kevin really at all. I was like, "Oh yeah, okay, you know, I'll keep that in mind or whatever." So at the end of that season, I had been done a show a little bit with Garrett Green, who was Sean Aronson's intern that season. We were doing a weekly show together, and Garrett was obviously leaving, and so I took Kevin's recommendation or request from the previous year, and I said, "Why don't we do this podcast show together? You know, and kind of look around the league and discuss stuff that's going on," and I think it has opened amazing doors for both of us to have this opportunity to go around and you know, all the broadcasters have something to tell us about stuff now, and we, you know, players talk to us about things or whatever, because we're this week in the association. You know, it's not that big of a deal, but it is, you know, it is in a sense. And so my thought for people out there is that if you're interested in doing something, take a page out of the Kevin Lucco playbook and say, you know, hey, I'll happily do that. Because you just never know what it could lead to. And Kevin's having a great time now because he took a chance on something, and I'm glad to hear it's been pretty cool for him. So, Kevin, that makes me happy to know you've been really enjoying this.
Yeah, it's been fabulous. I just kind of had one of those moments on Saturday where I was kind of like, wow, is this for real? Am I in the middle of Kansas right now watching two teams that aren't even the Saints? It's just, yeah, it was, and you know, you're right, the confidence is there right now. At first, I kind of always felt like, gosh, I don't think I belong here. I know you had to deal with that with me for quite a while, but I tell you what, now, you know, the confidence is there. I got no qualm about telling anyone, hey, I'm with this week in the association. You heard before, like, yeah, we kind of do a podcast, but now, you know, I say with a sense of pride.
And you should do so, because I think we didn't reach the goal that I was really shooting for this season, but I'm going to be working that for next year, and I'm really trying to between the two of us to do something really special with this for next season. So we're going to make that a reality. I do want to mention though, one other thing is that, Kevin and I will be broadcasting each night now, through the playoffs, for this week in the association, providing our recaps of the games. The only exception to that will be Friday nights when no games will be played barring rain delays, which we hope doesn't occur, but
right.
So I got to throw that out there, but so Wednesday and Thursday, and then Saturday, Sunday and Monday, if necessary. Then when the championship is hoisted for somebody, then we will have a closing out the season show at that point. But come join us each night. I will post the show immediately following our broadcast. So probably about 10:30. If you want to stay awake and listen, otherwise you can catch it in the morning time. So, Kevin, going to be exciting time of the season. Are you heading to Fargo this week at all?
And no, I don't believe so. I'm going to be staying at home, with my paying job schedule. I just had the weekend off, which I thought, at the time when the schedule came out, I just thought, well, I'll be going either to Fargo or Sioux City. I didn't never imagine that I was going to be just having to have the road a bit to good old St. Paul. But so yeah, I'll be staying local for the first round, and then wherever the final three games of the championship series are, whether, and we know it'll be either St. Paul or Fargo because they have the two best records in the league. Wherever it's going to be at, you'll find me.
That's what we
If you
love to
let me in
hear.
the door.
And they will. They will. Jack and Sean will have you in no matter what. So, it'll be working out. Oh, Kevin, I almost forgot before we close out here today. Do we have the Kevin Luko power rankings for the end of the season?
Yes, I newly done. I just did them before our show tonight. This week, the power rankings are brought to you by Jack in the Box of the Legends area of Kansas City, Kansas, where that was breakfast for me for the 2 mornings that I was in Kansas City. I get it, maybe some people in other areas kind of take it for granted, but up here in Minnesota, we don't have any Jack in the Boxes, and oh boy, I love me some good breakfast, and I highly recommend the sausage breakfast burritos there. It was really good stuff.
Best French
But,
fries, for sure.
well, my doctor's telling me to stay away from those, so. Again,
Very good
I've
advice.
heard good things about the French fries, and I thought their menu looked really good too. Chocolate cake was tempting, but not so much in the morning. When my parents were snowbirding in Arizona, they said they ate at Jack in the Box all the time down there, and I would just love at some point to get one up here in Minnesota.
We'll have to work on that. So,
Anyway, here we go. Number 12, they tried really hard, but they could not get out of the 12th spot, the Texas Air Hogs. Falling to number 11, I think they may have been top three at one time, are the Sioux Falls Canaries.
wow,
Edging
and that
them,
learned.
yeah. I think someone had them picked to finish third and so.
I did. I had them in third, but boy, they sure faltered in the last 4 or 5 weeks.
Okay, well, number 10, the Milwaukee Milkmen kind of dove as the year went on. They finished 10. Lincoln South Dogs are number 9. Gary South Shore got up to number 8, so good for them because they were languishing towards the bottom. Number 7, the Cleburne Railroaders. And wow, I guess the power rankings kind of mirror what happened towards the end of the season, so. I guess we shouldn't be overly stunned by this.
That makes sense.
Number 6, Sioux City Explorers. Number 5, Chicago Dogs. They dropped a couple spots after a so-so finish to their year. Number 4, Winnipeg Gold Eyes. Winnipeg kind of feasted on Sioux Falls and Gary in the last week to get their ranking bumped up. The hot streak for Kansas City gets them up to number 3. Number 2 are the Fargo Moorhead Redhawks, and St. Paul Saints take the number 1 spot. In my blog that I just did, that you can find on 10thinningstretch.blogspot.com, I make a note for each spot. And yeah, for Saints, I just said, is this the year Sammons gets his first championship since 2004?
Well, they had to go through Fargo to get to that championship series. So let's see if it's deja vu there for the St. Paul Saints to make that
Yeah, isn't
back
that
there.
something? That's the last time we met in the playoffs.
Pretty unheard of, isn't it? Jack Michaels saying it had been 5 years since Fargo had been in the playoffs. Wow, that's, it's kind of unusual for a team that had such a dominating history. So pretty surprising for sure. So.
Yeah, that was in my notes too. I said it's the first time a non-Doug Cimnick managed team will be in the postseason.
That's a pretty good marker there for the team, though. Well, we want to thank you for joining us this week. For Kevin Lukow, I am Rob Panier, and we will see you next time. on This Week in the Association.